And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Wednesday morning, June 17th. Currently 65 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 66 degrees at the Heber City Airport, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. Get ready for a lot of sunshine as we go throughout the day. In fact, the UV index is at 11 today. That's in the extreme category. That means you could burn in less than 5 minutes if you tend to burn very easily out there. So make sure you have that sunscreen SPF 30 or greater. You don't want to have any issues as we go throughout today. Otherwise, it's going to be a fairly warm day out there for us as those highs climb into the low 80s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the upper 80s to around 90 degrees in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Thursday, more sunshine is on the way. Temperatures a little warmer than today. So we'll see those highs on your Thursday in the mid-80s in Park City, and we'll be in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. But the warmest weather likely arrives as we head into your Friday. Your Juneteenth forecast is looking like a mostly sunny skies, a couple of high clouds building up in the mountains. But overall, we'll see those temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 80s in Park City. And we're tracking high temperatures that will likely climb into the low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley. So definitely a toasty day as we go into your Friday as the ridge of upper level high pressure shifts to our east. Now, after that, heading into your Father's Day weekend, we'll start to see a gusty wind picking up out of the south and west. And that will actually help to lower temperatures a little bit and bring in a slightly bit more of some moisture out there. So we'll be looking at high temperatures for your Saturday in Park City, only around 80 degrees, and we'll stay there around 80 degrees for a high temperature for your Father's Day on Sunday. Meanwhile, the Heber Valley will see those highs in the mid-80s for your Saturday, with highs back in the mid-80s on your Sunday as well. We'll see a chance of an isolated pop-up dry thunderstorm on your Saturday, mainly some lightning and gusty winds, not a lot of rain, but it's a very slight chance. We're drier by Sunday, which not only is Father's Day, but also just happens to be the summer solstice. So we officially kick off summer, astronomically speaking, as we go into your Sunday as well. And we stay very summer-like into next week. That's the latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up this morning on the Local News Hour, I'll be checking in with Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation Executive Director Mike Lures. Later on, Heber City Council Member Yvonne Barney calling in with a recap of yesterday's City Council meeting. And finally, from Summit Community Gardens and Eats Executive Director Helen Nadel will be stopping by. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Dr. Timothy Dorler, discussing the rise of concierge medicine, the science of healthy longevity, and the simple evidence-based habits that can have the biggest impact on how well and how long we live. Then Julia Geisler of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance has more on the July debut of the new climbing film, Alpenbach. It showcases the untold history of climbing in Little Cottonwood Canyon. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, heard, of course, every Wednesday between 9 and 10. Taking a quick look at some local news, Wasatch County pushing back on attempts to bring mining to Daniels Canyon. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the county's asking a court to toss out its approval.
After a court-ordered public hearing in April, Maverick Rock was allowed to move forward with mining in Daniels Canyon. County Manager Dustin Graybaugh said Wasatch County filed a challenge at the decision with the Utah Court of Appeals June 10th. Meanwhile, it also has to comply with the state-mandated next steps that move the project forward. Maverick mines limestone and shale about 40 miles away in Goshen, a Utah County town. The company says it can bring operations to 426 acres of land along U.S. Highway 40 based on a Utah law that lets companies bypass the typical public planning process required of new mines. Instead, a company can expand its mining rights into a new area if it has enough structural similarities to and shared history with its existing mine.
The owner said they could open a mine on Main Street in Heber if there was this same mineral deposit, and there's nothing Heber City or Wasatch County or any other entity could do to stop them. I think that is exactly the type of abuse of the state code that we don't feel like was intended by the legislature.
Graybaugh said the appeal could set a precedent to prevent similar situations. The county, he said, has obtained records showing Maverick intends to mine at additional sites in Wasatch County and Saratoga Springs under the law. Maverick Rock first announced plans to expand into Wasatch County in February 2025. The county attorney's office denied its request, sending the dispute to 4th District Court, which ruled in the company's favor. Maverick has since submitted its operations plan to the county. The county then sought public feedback. It also hired professionals to suggest measures to mitigate environmental, transportation, safety, and air and water quality concerns.
Danielstown has a wellhead immediately adjacent to this that is a major source of drinking water for the town. And so we have a lot of concerns about what a mine would do if they were to contaminate or dewater that area.
The county now must schedule another public hearing before the end of July so Maverick can accept or reject requested mitigation measures. Graybaugh said the public hearing will likely be July 1st. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Director Mike Lors, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
As always, let's start with our weekly wastewater surveillance summary.
So each week, we take two samples from each of our treatment facilities, and we look for the genetic material that's associated with COVID as well as measles. This most recent study and sampling shows that the COVID virus is at very, very low levels across the board, which is good news. And fortunately, we have not had any recent positive measles testing.
Mm-hmm. Now, as kind of the COVID virus changes, is there always markers then to pick up what the kind of current
yes.
strain is?
Yeah, so that the sequencing that's done by the Utah Health Department is updated every time there's a new variety or a change in the genetic makeup of the COVID virus.
Okay. Let's see. You also have this month's flush index report.
Right. So for the month of May, we estimated that there were 93,352 visitor nights for the month. That's down about 2.5% from last year.
Okay. And do we know how that corresponds with what the chamber's reporting?
They're seeing a downturn as well. Most recent, just some of the numbers that we're seeing for June are looking a little bit better.
Okay. Let's see. Let's talk a little bit about sewer laterals. And these are, maybe you start by just telling us what they are.
Sure. So we want to get the word out on what a sewer lateral is and educate the public what their responsibility is. So when you flush the commode in your house or use the washing machine, the water flows down a small pipe underneath your house, out to your front or backyard, to the main sewer line. That pipe is called a sewer lateral, and it's owned and maintained by the property owner, and it goes from your house all the way out to the main line. Sometimes that might be across a street, might be across someone else's property, maybe across a ditch, but the sewer lateral is owned and to be maintained by the property owner. And we want to get kind of the word out on this because the cost to maintain these private sewer laterals has really, really increased dramatically. And recently, one of our customers had a problem with their sewer lateral, and it cost them about $30,000 to repair it, which was, you know, a huge, huge amount of money. And it was unexpected, and I really feel for the homeowner. But these lines are located on private property for the most part, except for that portion that may be underneath the street or some kind of right-of-way. But the homeowner is responsible for that portion from the home all the way to the main line, including under any type of, you know, landscaping or easements or even streets. And what's important here is that the standard homeowner's insurance typically does not cover sewer lateral backups or repairs. And with the increased cost that we're seeing, we just want to draw this to our customers' attention that you might consider getting a service line coverage rider to your homeowner's policy or even a standalone insurance policy. I've seen these frequently advertised and they're not that expensive, but if you have an older home, especially with a lot of landscaping and sewer lateral may go underneath a ditch or road or whatever, these repairs can be exceedingly expensive. And as I indicated, we're seeing some of our customers coming in talking to us about this because of the extremely high cost. So You might take a look at your sewer lateral. If you have any questions of where your sewer lateral is located, give us a call. Our engineering department will look it up if we have the records. If it's an older home, we may not have records, but we really encourage our customers to consider looking at some type of service line insurance coverage.
Yeah, so why have costs gone up so much?
You know, just construction costs over the last, 5, 6 years, 10 years, has just gone up dramatically. Material costs has gone up. The cost to, dig into a road, replace the pavement, the backfill, all of those type of things have just all gone up collectively. And this is a big deal. We will be putting some notices out on our billings. We may have a individual mail out just on this item for our customers to let folks know that, the cost of maintaining these lines is not like it used to be.
Yeah, so how many have you seen?
You know, we're seeing more of these on the older homes. You know, these sewer lines don't last forever. Some of the older pipeline materials are not the modern, what we call PVC plastic pipe. They might have been clay pipe, or there's an old type of pipe called Owensburg that is really a poor material. And so we're starting to see more of these, and I think what we're really seeing is more people coming, talking to us because the costs have gone up so much. While they have always been homeowners that need to repair their lines in the past, we're seeing more folks really like, wow, this is not something I expected, and I didn't realize that, I'm going to spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, repairing a little 4-inch sewer line.
Yeah, so why, you'd mentioned maybe just by the construction that they're made out of these laterals, why else would a lateral go bad? I mean, they would disintegrate if it was clay? Is that what happens? Or
some of the Owensburg pipe does disintegrate over time. It just, they sold it as a great pipe material, but it's not. The newer PVC pipe, lasts for, 50, 60, 70 years. That's not a problem. The other thing is, if you have some type of construction in the area, let's say an optical cable line goes in or some other type of nearby construction, we've seen situations where the private lateral gets hit and kind of no one knows about it for a while, and then the homeowner is stuck with making those repairs if they can't prove that someone else is responsible. And it's just maintenance. It's like painting your house or whatever, other type of things, replacing your furnace. Your private sewer lateral needs to be maintained.
Okay, so what does maintenance, entail?
Well, first of all, if you like flush your commode or use your, tub, washing machine, whatever, and it starts draining slowly and kind of sluggish, that's usually the first sign that something's wrong. That usually means that there's an obstruction in the pipe, a partial obstruction. And at that point, I would have a plumber come out and put a TV camera down your line and inspect it. Because if you have those types of situations occurring and you don't do anything about it, it could plug up completely and then flood your home with raw sewage. And now you got a really, really major, issue. So if you have any indication that things are not draining correctly, the great news is that technology is now available where the sewer line can be inspected from the inside and see what kind of condition it's in.
Yeah, so the plumber would look into that kind of thing that sticks out in the yard somewhere with a little cap on it?
Right. We call those clean outs, and those are basically ports to inspect the pipe. And also an access point so that if the lateral gets stopped up for some reason, they can put equipment down in there and unstop the pipeline. But typically the cameras are inserted through the clean-out plugs, it doesn't hurt every 10 years to have a plumber inspect your line to see what condition it's in, because it's just like maintaining anything else. If you wait till the last minute, usually bad things happen, and not only maintaining and the cost of maintaining the lateral, but you certainly don't want any kind of backup to your home. And this is for businesses as well. So any business, their private lateral is their responsibility. And if there's any indication that it's not working correctly, we highly recommend that you get it inspected. But in the long term, the service line insurance coverage is something that you might consider.
All right. And does that lateral, where does the owner's responsibility end? Right as it connects to the middle of the street or somewhere?
Yeah, that is correct.
Just at the end of my property?
No, it's at where it connects.
Okay.
And so, the main sewer line may be on your side of the street, it may be on the other side of the street, it may be in your backyard. So it's where the connection's made, and that's where people are sometimes unaware that their responsibility extends all the way to the main line, wherever that happens to be.
Okay, and that's where we would see, where the nearest manhole cover is, that's where it would connect?
Well, typically, they do not connect at the manhole. They connect between the manholes on the main line. It's that portion that's underneath an alley or street is the homeowner's responsibility, and that's why we want to get the word out to, hey, take a look at it and consider insurance.
Okay, and you'd mentioned older homes, but that's just due to the wear and tear of the pipe. What about landscaping? What problems can that cause?
Well, if you, a couple of things. First of all, if you're installing landscaping, you obviously don't want to hit your private lateral. Sometimes that happens and people don't know it, and again, if you do some landscaping and you notice your plumbing is a little sluggish, you want to get it inspected. The second thing is, when you install all that landscaping, or you have a 20-year-old beautiful aspen tree, and now you need to replace your sewer line, guess what? You have to dig all that up. And that's, we have had a recent situation where a 30-year-old tree had to be cut down to replace her sewer line. And I love trees, and I completely have empathy for the homeowners. And this is where, maybe insurance can help out.
Okay. All right. So everybody, bring a plumber over, I guess, or, look at your insurance. And
Two things. First thing is look at your insurance and consider if you need a rider or some kind of standalone, utility policy. And the second thing is it doesn't hurt to have your sewer lateral inspected occasionally.
Okay. And also, you try to bring us a helpful tent each month. Tell us what that tip is for this month.
Yeah, so, if your water usage starts going up, or you get a notice from your water company that your water usage is going up and you possibly have a leak and you can't find it, and this is after you've made sure you don't have a leaky commode, and, you've put the dye in the tank and all those kind of things, go down to your utility room, and when no one is using the water, go up to your hot water heater and listen to see if you hear water running. Because hot water heaters have a pressure relief valve. It's a safety valve for pressure on the side of them. And usually they have a pipe that comes down on the exterior side of the hot water heater and goes to your drain. If that's leaking and you got piped to your drain, you might not see it or know that it's leaking. And, eventually those pressure relief valves will fail. It's not uncommon at all. Home Depot keeps them in stock because after about 5 years, they need to be replaced. And that's just something that you might pay attention to.
Okay. Hey, I just had somebody text me saying that they had heard from a sprinkler installer that realtors are rushing to install backflow pipes in order to sell properties. So what's going on there? What are backflow pipes?
I think they're talking about backflow preventers.
Okay.
The local water companies are required to work with homeowners to ensure that there's backflow preventers on the water portion of a homeowner's system, and you need to talk to your water company about that. But I am familiar that some of the water companies are working with homeowners to get backflow preventers installed.
Okay, that's not cheap either. Yeah. Okay, Mike. Yeah. Hey, anything else?
Just real quick, we've been working with the local health department and the state health department laboratory on what we call the wastewater metagenomics study. And this has been going on for 6 months, working with Phil Bondurant and Dr. Kelly Oakson with the Utah Health and Human Services Department. We've been looking at taking wastewater and looking for all type of pathogens that may be in that wastewater. And you'll need to talk to Phil or Dr. Oakerson to get the results. But we will be holding a meeting. But I think we all agree that this program has significant potential and can be a valuable tool for human health. So it's been an exciting study being a partner with them. And we hope to continue working with them on the metagenomics study.
Okay. Has that meeting date been set at this point?
We have not set the meeting date, but everyone so far is saying good things about it.
Okay. Mike, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Mike Lures is the executive director of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Heber City Council met yesterday, and on the phone to recap the meeting, I have Council Member Yvonne Barney. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the major order of business yesterday, of course, approving next fiscal year's budget. Did that go as planned?
It did on many levels. We approved a couple of resolutions. The overall budget itself will be approved in August. At this time, we are just going through certain segments, if you will, of the budget that need to be approved separately, and most of last night was that portion.
Okay, so it's not happening until August because you've got a truth and taxation hearing for a property tax increase?
Yes, so exactly.
Tell me how much that's going to be and what that's for.
Most of that will be, of course, for an increase. They are seeking, the city is seeking a property tax increase of about 5%, 5.2%. It's difficult as a council member to sometimes push forward this type of budget to the citizens. If you recall, back in 2024, at that time, we also did an increase for the budget. And so personally for myself, I really do hope that we have done everything we can as a city to kind of do our best to mind our dimes and nickels and be aware of how important this is for the citizens. It's a difficult time, and asking for more money always is an unpopular ask for the citizens. And so going forward, we are trying to make sure that we are covering everything and doing everything we can so that when this is presented in August, it is done fairly and open and transparent.
Okay, and this is just to cover general fund costs, huh?
It's mostly for that, and also we have a couple of positions that we are trying to fill within a couple of our departments. We have, especially I'll talk about our planning department. They have gone for many years without proper help, and we are adding another employee there. And so with shifting of funds in some areas, that's what we're trying to cover and make sure that we can do that.
Okay, and as I recall, we're talking about $19 more a year for a home valued at $850,000.
Yes. Again, yep. About $15.
Okay.
Anywhere from $15 to $19 for your businesses.
Okay, businesses usually pay almost twice as much.
Yes.
Let's see. In terms of the major capital projects that were budgeted for the coming year, I know you finished kind of the water line replacement. What's coming up next year?
As far as capital?
Yes.
We have just a few. We're trying to finish up a couple of the, still doing the water line, looking to do some areas on the west side of town. We're still in the process of planning that. Our engineering department is taking care of that. We are still trying to, in the phases of Heber City Park, we have met with TerraCon, which is the consulting group that has come in and is providing a outline for a possible master plan for Heber City's park and Main Street Park. And also just a few things here and there. We have a salt building that is collapsing on us. in our public works department. Those are things that we will also be taking care of, but mostly just maintenance and projects that will, you know, help us with our community and things that we need to improve within the community.
All right. During work session, the City Council reviewed the Highlands proposed PIDs. These are public improvement districts. First, tell us where the Highlands is located.
The Highlands is located on the northeast section of Heber City, in what we call the NVOZ, the North Village Overlay Zone. It is right after the Commons area. There's that area through there, and in and around behind the UVU property there.
All right.
Yeah.
So why do they need a PID? And I think they're actually asking for three PIDs, if I read that right.
It will be a phased PID, yes. They're looking for PIDs mostly for their townhomes. None of their stacked flats properties will be included in this PID. This is for the standalone townhomes and parks. They're looking to also put in parks and trails and so forth, but this is mostly for infrastructure, for their utilities, roads, and so forth. They're seeking a PID because the way they shared with us last night was they're trying to provide some affordable housing, attainable. I like to use the word attainable, but attainable housing for citizens. And they feel that with the PID, it will decrease the overall amount for each of those units by $40,000. And their presentation was that in using the PID, it will help them to keep these homes attainable and also enable them to put in a strong infrastructure for their community.
Mm-hmm. Now, what happens with a PID is that they are then allowed to issue bonds that are repaid through a limited property tax mill levy on those properties within the PID, so it doesn't fall on all Heber City taxpayers. If we're talking about attainable affordability, I mean, now they're going to have higher property taxes. Is that a concern?
It is, and that is something that I actually questioned, and I'm not a strong proponent for the PID system. I realize that it has been used successfully. Last night we were shared with the organization, the lending organization, that they've used this in Colorado for many years. And while I recognize that it has been done and has been successful, I realize also that there are some pitfalls, if you will, with the PID system. Of course, we've seen it in the media. There's been the concern with the failed community in Colville. And we also know that the Utah State Auditor's Office has been extremely loud, if you will, when it comes to their disapproval of the PID system. It creates a windfall, if you will, or a potential for many millions of dollars that are unpaid, left unpaid, possibility of projects that could be left unpaid because of failure, because of mismanagement. It's not a system that is easily audited. The state has no ability to audit these PIDs, and so therefore there's just a lot of things, but mostly for me it's what happens to the citizens who are within the PID district that come in, they purchase the homes, and even if there's a transparency there, even if the developer is very transparent on here's how it will be, I still believe that citizens walk in thinking, oh, we can do this, and then the reality of the property taxes and other taxes with the PID on top of that becomes almost unbearable. And is it really attainable housing at that point? So with all of that, I think sometimes it's best. And Heber City has quite a few PIDs with many of the communities in the NVOC area, especially. So I'm moving forward cautiously. I know that there are other council members who see this as a benefit for the community, and I respect their decisions, but I prefer to kind of look at the full picture, and for me, I just am not sure that this is a good way to go.
Yeah, so were they approved by the council?
No, no. We are right now asking for clear numbers. Some of the numbers that they shared with us were outdated tax quotes, and also they were sharing numbers that are unrealistic in the Heber Valley. There has been very few properties that have been sold below $600,000, and we asked that they come back and kind of regroup and share some of their numbers and a few other things.
Yeah. So what would happen if the project goes under? I mean, who becomes liable for those bonds?
It will be the bondholders. It will be anyone who has provided those bonds. They will become liable. But again, it still is a money pit. I mean, you are held, all of these stakeholders are held holding, you know, millions of dollars in debt. And it creates things that can be possibly, I mean, as far as the auditor's department, you know, is concerned, it could possibly be divvied out to some of those homeowners that might be within that district, in that failed district who have purchased their homes. They might have to hold some of that weight as well. I know that most of those lending groups will say, no, that's not true. But we have seen it differently. And there have been moments when it shows that there will be individuals who will have to pay the price for it. And mostly it does, though, fall upon the bondholders.
Yeah. Well, and I certainly have been around long enough to remember the days when developers had to have the money to develop properties.
Exactly.
I mean, and that was the cost of doing business. And
exactly.
And now the state has allowed these PIDs as a way to, I mean, really to push growth. I mean, a way to manage growth would be to say, you know, no PIDs, because I mean, we see it even in the staff report itself from the developers. It's like says without the PID, the developer's scope and timeline would be material constrained. And even the city's policy allowing PIDs sees it as a way to accelerate growth. The policy saying the purpose of PIDs is to help expedite development and permit development
exactly.
where typical
mm-hmm.
conditions may not permit construction. So with this policy, it sounds like Heber City is in fact, you know, it's like more growth.
You know, unfortunately, we are in a state right now, Utah State itself and the legislation that is very development friendly. We've seen it over the last just, you know, 8 years of how we have shifted from a state that is a slow growth but steady growth and has been positive in many ways. And now we are just in a boom of this constant push for more development. And a lot of that is due to the fact, in truth, of having legislators who are working either developers themselves or involved and benefit from development within the state. It's an unfortunate fact. I wish I could say we could control that. But what we can control locally is as a city to kind of be cautious, to realize that we have grown in leaps and bounds within Heber City, so much so that our property values have exploded. And it is creating an unfortunate situation where many of those whom we need to service our community can no longer live in our community because of how expensive it is. And in part, I do believe that allowing PIDs, it allows this cycle of individuals who are now living outside of Heber City, yet they are police officers or firefighters and so forth. And it is because we are pushing it. And while we say the PIDs, many developers will say, well, these PIDs will make it possible for us to to provide you obtainable homes. In fact, that is not the case. After those PIDs are implemented, many of those homes become a burden on the individuals. And we've not seen, and very rarely in most of these PID districts, it is not something where people are living within their means. It's very difficult for them to, because the housing price is so high and their mortgage payments are so high, and the PID taxes on top of that makes it almost unattainable.
Okay. So, I want to move on real quick. The council was set to approve a resolution adopting a phase of the Heber City Water Shortage Plan, hoping to stave off more drastic measures going forward this summer. So what did you guys decide?
We decided to approve the phase two. The phase two will include, this is a voluntary phase. It is mostly for individuals. This does not include culinary water users. We have within Heber City two types of users. We have the culinary water, where they use just the regular system to water their lawns and their outside needs, whether it's for their gardens or their lawns and so forth. And then we also have the pressurized irrigation system, which is throughout most of the Central Heber area. This is mostly applies to the Central Heber area. None of this applies to drinking water, everyday usage for laundry, dishwashers, you know, so forth, taking a bath. It does not, we are not requiring anyone to hold back or to, you know, wash or do anything at certain times. It's mostly for pressurized irrigation users to please, you know, make sure that you're watering in the evenings, at dusk or in the early morning hours, to minimize your watering. If you're on a sprinkling system, then to maybe cut back from, you know, however many days you are doing it, to cut back to 3 or 4 days, to down to maybe 3 or 2 days, even possibly if you can, 1 day a week. It's just to ask. It's voluntary, but we want people to be aware that we are in a drought, in a severe drought right now. The river flow for Provo right now is at 80%, which means that we are now having to go into storage from Jordanelle and open up some of that storage to allow it to go down to the down the river. And it's something that the CUPW is watching and monitoring carefully. There was discussion as well. You know, we have citizens who have been very frustrated. They drive by municipalities. It might be the parks, also farmers and their fields. And people think, well, why are they watering in the middle of the day? Well, the system is set up for individuals like that and for those areas. They are on an irrigation system. And so they're given certain allotments of time that they have to water large portions of their fields, large portions of the park system. And so they have to use that time and use the water that they're given and the allotted time to be able to push it forward. So that also means at times that they will be watering during the day. It's not something that they are choosing to do. This is something that they are, it's a requirement. And so they have only so much time to be able to water their portions of fields, their systems, especially when you look at the irrigation systems on the farm fields. Those machines tend to move very slowly. So they have to do it and use that allotted time, sometimes during the day. So this isn't because they're being unwise with their money or, with the water system. They are just doing what they have, and they have been also forced to cut back by the CUPW. So they're very aware of these two groups, and they're monitoring their water as well.
Okay. And finally, the council was also scheduled to adopt the Heber Valley Airport lease and the amended fixed base operator lease. Did both go through?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And I would like to mention that this was through much effort from our attorney, Jeremy Cook, and with work from the AAB, the airport board. And we appreciate all the hard work that everyone involved did. it was a unanimous approval, and that's what I was looking for. I feel that if the AAB is supporting it, then I'll definitely support it.
Okay, Yvonne, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
Yvonne Barney is a member of the Heber City Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. In the studio with me from Summit Community Gardens and Eats, I have Executive Director Helen Nadel. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay, so what's happening in the garden?
Well, you know what? It is finally time to plant those tomatoes. I know we've been talking for a couple months now that people maybe want to wait, or if they're going to plant tomatoes and other hot crops to cover them. But right now, it's go time. We are planting for the food pharmacy this week. We are putting into the ground peppers, tomatoes, all of our summer squash. Those have been, you know, waiting patiently in greenhouses down in Salt Lake until we're ready to get them in the ground. Now is the time. So for all you home gardeners, for all you folks who are community gardeners, enjoy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, mine survived, luckily. Gosh, yeah. There was a couple of cold nights. Yes.
Glad to hear it. Yeah. Let's see. If you're growing garlic, be on the lookout for garlic scapes. I know a bunch of us are dealing with voles and pot guts and other pests in gardens. I did want to just put a little... just to mention that we are going to be having on Thursday our monthly gardening class. And this month, it's all about how to deal with pests that may be getting in the way of a great harvest. I know in the community garden, a lot of our leaves, so kale, collards, were all eaten by pot guts. In my personal plot, my peas just disappeared. And so I'm really looking forward to Jess, garden director, being able to share some really good strategies for how to deal with all kinds of pests, from insects to critters.
Yeah, I saw the kale gone as well. Tell me, garlic scapes, what are those?
Yeah, so garlic scapes, if folks have planted garlic back in the fall as a bulb, that's what you do with garlic. Garlic scapes are actually, you can imagine it as the stem of the plant. So you'll see a shoot come out of the garlic leaves that are probably starting to turn a little yellow. When that is the stem of the plant, and it will have, you'll see like a little... like a round kind of thing at the end of it. That's the flower. What you wanna do, once that garlic scape, that stem, starts to curl in on itself, you wanna snip it. Because if you don't do that, all of the energy of the plant will go into flower production, right? It wants to create seeds. All the energy will go there instead of the garlic bulb, which is what we want to eat. You'll just snip that at the end, and honestly, it is one of the true gardening farmers market treats. If you see garlic scapes, you can use it like you would garlic or scallion. It is fantastic in any kind of sauteed vegetable dish, in a stew, in a soup, in a salad. People make pesto out of it. It's really mild and delicate. It does have that garlicky flavor, though. It's a really special treat.
Okay, so. And it's, you snip from the base of the plant there.
You snip from the base of the stem. So you leave the leaves, just snip from the base of the stem.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's busy out there with kids' camp starting. Talk to us a little bit about children in the garden.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I overheard something yesterday that it was a very simple thing. One of the campers was walking on a path in the garden, and she asked one of our summer educators, "Can I please go and harvest more of those lemony leaves?" And I thought how much that statement says. Kids, we are teaching kids where food comes from. So kids can really be stewards of the land. They can really protect the soil, ultimately understand farming and how hard it is to farm in our climate, but truly everywhere, the creativity and commitment needed to grow food. And I think, you know, that I actually brought, Leslie, some of these. I've got right now a little vase with a lemony leaf for you. So this is called sorrel. It grows in the garden. It's a kid's favorite. So tell me what you think.
It tastes like a green plant. I haven't tasted the lemon.
Okay, it's a very bright, sharp leaf. A lot of kids love it. Right now, we are harvesting.
Oh, I got it now.
You
yeah.
got it?
Yeah.
Mint, lavender, catmint, chives, thyme, all kinds of things we're harvesting in the garden right now to cook with kids. And all of our garden camps are filled with harvesting and gardening. And I think that it also, you know, one of the unique things that Summit Community Gardens and Eats does with kids is to really explore taste literacy, right? So that word lemony, right? It describes flavor. We're not saying like, do you like it? We're not saying, you know, you should eat it because it's good for you. We're asking them, what do you think about, how does it feel in your mouth? What's the texture like? What kinds of flavors does it have? And I think this really helps kids understand that there are so many different flavors and tastes out there. We sample lots of different ways to try the same ingredient. Since just because you don't like it raw doesn't mean that you won't like it when it's cooked or when it's cooked with herbs. So that's really what we're exploring in the garden in camp this summer and during, you know, during the school year up in classrooms.
Okay, so is that how you would use it? Would you cook it or would you just chop it up in a salad?
I mean, honestly, I love it in a salad. That's my favorite thing to do with it. It is originally a French herb. I think it's used a lot in soups and stews, but it just adds a bright, you know, that bright lemony flavor. I'll throw out there that we are gonna have it in our snacking garden. That's the U-Pick area of Summit Community Gardens where everybody is welcome to come and harvest and sample a little bit of something. There is some sorrel now in the garden. I'll say, you know, for your best U-Pick options, I would wait a couple of weeks. And that's when we'll have sugar snaps and spinach and lettuce and lots of other herbs coming in. It's also when our first food pharmacy harvest will be in early July. So that's when we're really going to have an abundance in the garden.
Okay. You still have some camp openings?
We do. Yeah. I wanted to just mention that we have most availability is in July when we will have so much to harvest and cook with. The week of July 13th is an exploration and discovery week in the garden. The week of the 20th, we're focusing on arts and culture with our friends from Artes de Mexico coming to talk about the Three Sisters or La Milpa Garden and to really explore all the ways that, you know, we as humans, if you think about kind of our food stories, our family's food stories, the way that food is really linked to identity, key part of that camp. So please go on the website. There is limited availability on other weeks, but you can definitely hop on a wait list if you don't see your favorite camp available. And I'll just mention that we do have scholarships available all week, all the weeks. And we really encourage people to do that. We have folks from our workforce. We have folks, I just talked to a parent yesterday, you know, husband is in ski patrol. She is a mountain guide, so we're really trying to serve all parts of our community so that everybody has access to the special experience in garden camp.
Okay, so camp hours are what?
9 to 1 most weeks, and then some weeks there's also an add-on 1 to 3.
Okay. All right. We're going to save the Miss Billy story for another time, but let's talk a little bit about some of your upcoming events. You mentioned the Vole and Potgut class this Thursday. When and where is that?
This Thursday from 5:30 to 6:30. It's at Summit Community Gardens. Jess will be there with lots of tips. I'll probably end up tasting one or two things as well from the garden. And then we do have a special, really special workshop on July 14th. It's a cacao workshop. It's a real cultural immersion into the Zoque Maya chocolate making tradition. Esmeralda Torres, whose family has been farming cacao in Chiapas for about 5 generations, lives in Salt Lake as a teacher. She has taught hands-on workshops where participants learn the origin, the significance, the cultural significance of chocolate, and we'll all use traditional tools to grind the roasted cacao beans from Chiapas that she's brought into chocolate. We're going to taste traditional chocolate drinks. We're going to taste that chocolate. It is absolutely delicious. It's a really special opportunity. And Esmeralda is warm, tons of knowledge. She's amazing.
Does cacao grow here?
Cacao does not grow here. That's why it is brought from southern Mexico here for us to sample.
And what's the difference between cacao and cocoa?
That's a great question. Cacao is the unprocessed bean. It looks almost like a lima bean or a fava bean that then gets roasted and it's dark. And cocoa is already the processed. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then you've also saved the date for the Pie and Beer Night.
Oh, my gosh. Pie and Beer Night, July 24th. That's a Friday night this year. I want to mention we have Park City Classics. Offset Beer, for the first time, is going to be working with us. We are thrilled about their generosity. Also, Auntie M's. We'll have pies from Auntie M's of all flavors. And two truly classic Park City businesses, Red Banjo Pizza and Esti Pizzeria, are going to be providing the pizza there. We'll have music. It's a great party. It's a great picnic. the opportunity to meet lots of different people sitting at those picnic tables, looking at the mountains, and just enjoying some great times, great vibes, great folks.
Yeah, family friendly.
That is a 21 plus event because we are serving beer. Yes.
Okay. Registration ongoing. I think you can take a little bit more people than you usually do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've got a lot of space. We do have, I would say the other dinners in the garden are selling out fast, but you can hop on a wait list for some of those. We do still have space for, I think, for Hill's Kitchen and Shabu, Tupelo, and Twisted Fern and the Loma Dinner are, there's less availability there. But we want to just give a huge thank you to the community partners and restaurants that are providing an incredible evening for folks at the garden.
Okay, Helen, I'm going to leave it there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
See you next month.